Let's talk about the CEO. As far as hiring in previous decades, what do you think have been good and bad about previous hires?
Some of the good qualities of my favorite CEO, Dave Ressler, who I think was highly thought of in our community, is that he was an inspiring person to be around. He was very open. He took time to meet with you regardless of, you know, how big or small a matter you were to bring to him because he wanted your input. Things that we maybe have not done well or even just got unlucky with are outsiders from beyond the valley that come in and don't quite understand the important values that the locals have as far as, say, more outdoor activities and quality of life, fresh air, those types of things. And I'm not sure many people in the United States know that until they get here. So I think it's very tough for some outsiders to come in, make friends.
And what about some bad previous hires?
I just know the two, Dave Ressler and Dan Bonk, and I'm not sure how well we set Dan up for success because of this coming from, you know, the Midwest with a son in high school that, you know, Dan have finally fit in here, but his son and wife quickly went back and then kind of left him here to make things work. But the thing that led to the hiring of Dan, I think, was some bad last minute decision making, because I'm told he was our number two choice and the number one choice was picked based on some very quick last minute decision making that was almost based on bad intelligence, so to speak, or bad information that could influence the board, received the information and quickly said, we can't pick this guy.
What are some mistakes the board has made that you would do differently?
I would be as open and cohesive as humanly possible to a fault if I were to be a board member. As you saw or may have seen in the newspaper this morning, Mick Ireland's comments on this being a dark election and the last election was canceled because nobody came forward after essentially no news given or no notice given that there was going to be an election. So it was canceled. Three board members received four more years. And now this election, Mick Ireland is kind of feeling like the same thing has happened. So this board, I feel, is just being too dark, to use Mick's term. And I don't think they reach out to the community enough. I think the more points of view that you get when you're talking about the trust of health that's placed in the board's hands, an $80 million budget, the health care that this community receives is all, you know, put in their hands. And I would not sleep well at night if I didn't ask many, many, many people about the tough issues, get people to run for the board versus just referring or just telling the community to vote for those that have been on the board before.
It seems like a common theme with a lot of people we've talked to that there's a disconnect. Would you agree with that?
I do. I certainly think that we can be more open and inclusive. There's a physician I work with that has described the boards and the administration as even being vindictive, specifically with how the orthopedic group was transitioned into the hospital. So yeah, a disconnect, as I call it, you know, divisive instead of inclusive.
What are the greatest challenges facing AVH and healthcare as a whole?
So there are sort of what I think of as sort of some local challenges, and then there's what I would think of or call the big picture, which is what's going on in the United States. Congress and Obama have tried to fix things with what has become known as Obamacare. It's a business that is so large that you and I probably can't put our heads around how to begin to solve the escalating costs. That's actually the problem. The escalating costs of healthcare is what most Americans struggle with. And so somebody at some point has to start to try and troubleshoot how we control those costs. We struggle with controlling costs as well, but that is going to have to sort of start to be fixed by the outside. We can do our little part, but the system is all set up from, you know, far, far away. Dave Ressler was an awesome proponent of trying to control costs and getting the big employers here and grouping together to try and control costs and offering more health care for everybody through the valley. But I don't know where that's gone since he's left, unfortunately.
One thing I know that Carolyn was touched on too on a national level is the decrease of reimbursement payments. Can you shed much light on that? Or that seems to be a big deal nationally and both and locally.
Right. So as I understand it, one of the ways that Medicare and Medicaid are controlling their costs is that they just reimburse hospitals and doctors less money as compared to the typical insurance company. And they do it by offering the volume that keeps many hospitals alive. So they say, we'll send you this patient population, which is Medicare and Medicaid. We'll send you that patient population, but you have to take less money for them. The problem is that it pinches doctors a lot of times, and doctors will plain old choose not to take those patients. And then those patients have to go, they have to look elsewhere for care. And it's a measure, and it by no means is the long-term way to solve the escalating, I guess, the runaway costs of healthcare by the biggest provider saying, we're just going to pay less for everybody. Because what that does for you and me, and most of us, most of the folks listening, the private insurers have to pay more to offset that cost. And I've got some ideas on how to fix that, but they might sound like Bernie Sanders. But some of the wealthier Americans, I believe, fall into the Medicare age. They, because they're Medicare, are paying the least for their health care despite having the biggest nest eggs to pull from. I don't think it wouldn't be unfair to ask them to pay a little bit more for health care instead of being the group that pays the least.
With the expansion of the hospital, how would you respond to community criticism about a $100 million plus expansion not providing any new services?
So we knew when we started building this great big building that there would not be any more services solely because you'd have to somehow either fly physicians in or drive them in for the day because there's no way to keep them busy here enough to pay somebody. So there are cases where we actually offset those costs by increasing costs over other services, and then you pay for things such as obstetrics here, which is obviously a very needed resource, right? So the hospital has a stipend or a fee that they're paying into that. If you start to spread that over many specialties, many new services, even two or three new services, that money has to come from somewhere. So that may mean that your hip replacement or your ACL repair is a few thousand dollars more because we want to offer, let's say, a respiratory specialist more than the one day he comes up from Denver a month. So the money has to come from somewhere. That brings up the point, is this building too big? Did we need a $120 million expansion? In my heart of hearts, I think we could have done a $60 million expansion and had an awesome facility. But this facility will be here for a very, very long time and I think serve the community very well.
What's the role of the board in a day-to-day management of the facility in organization?
Ideally, you have a board that sets a vision, some goals, hires the CEO, and if you hire the right CEO and you stand behind that person, I think the board on a day-to-day basis should have very, very little to do. An exception to that might be being in the community, speaking highly of our services, being in the hospital, seeing what we do right, seeing what we do wrong on a daily basis, weekly basis, at the least, I would say, go eat food there. Many of them probably, and I know, receive care there, but hang out, meet patients, ask them what we do right and wrong, give that feedback to the CEO, know what we're doing right and wrong, and have that administrative team run with the day-to-day operations.
What do you think is the board's role in crafting the vision for the hospital?
Nearly 100% of the vision, I would say, falls on the board. The one issue that I see with that is that our board only has 5 members. So that's a lot of vision that has to come out of a 5-person board. Therefore, in my opinion, you go into the community, you know, you talk to the Mick Irelands that have been here forever, the personalities at Aspen Public Radio, the skiing company. There are many, many, many resources, and you figure out what the needs are, what the community sees the vision of the hospital being, and then you go back, you put that together very concisely and turn that loose to your administration to run.
Given that around 90% of the board meetings include executive sessions, do you think that's appropriate for a publicly funded facility?
I struggle with it, and I have asked that very question the administration, some of the administration at the hospital. And the answer was that they seek legal counsel on what they can do behind closed doors. To that, I ask, does it need to be behind closed doors? Does it behoove the hospital to have that behind closed doors? And I don't think so. As much, in my opinion, should be done in the open. If the administration can do all that stuff, the employment, the hiring, the firing, behind closed doors, that's their job. If the board is doing that much behind closed doors, it either tells you that they're dealing too much with day-to-day operations of the hospital, or there is just far too many things going on behind closed doors.
Talking about finances, do you think AVH's finances are handled properly?
Our chief financial officer does an excellent job of holding on to the purse strings of the hospital so that unneeded items, I believe, aren't purchased. Is it possible that we can do better? I would say I know of a few examples, yes.
Last question, at least on this list, is how does AVH compete with Valley View Hospital? Do you see that as an issue now and into the future?
The hospitals are very competitive. My knowledge, there is only a single service that they share versus competing or fighting over patients for. The service they share is diabetes education. Valley View would love to take over the Valley. I believe they will if we grant them that ability. It's a nature of business is wanting to expand, grow, and AVH has a wonderful staff that I think is second to none. We have a staff that'll compete against anybody that comes after us. Financially, we're very sound. So where this plays out or how it plays out will have a lot to do with the board